Jackie Tan, and welcome to the Bodies Built Better podcast. On the show, we chat with experts, athletes, coaches, and authors to educate and inspire you. We explore the body's incredible ability to heal, adapt, and evolve so you can crush limitations, reconnect your body and mind, and discover your extraordinary potential. Today on the episode, I chat with local Ironman legend and all-time great guy, Kevin Ferguson. He's been a triathlete of the year, a four-time age group world champion, and was inducted as a legend of the sport by Triathlon Australia in 2015. He has run shoulder to shoulder with the world pro champions. But if you ask him, he'll tell you one of his greatest memories is helping his mate Sid James complete an Ironman. Kevin's stories are incredible, and even if you're not into triathlons, maybe you don't have a running bone in your body, but I guarantee you, you will eat up every word of Kevin's stories. He's an incredible man, an incredible athlete, and you will love this episode. So please enjoy this one with Kevin Ferguson. Kevin Ferguson, thank you so much for joining me today and chatting with me. Let's give everyone a bit of a background on who you are and why you're such a Ironman legend.
Yeah. Who am I? Oh,
who is Kevin?
Can become an old man, they say, by looks. But I suppose I've been around the sport for 25 years. Doing triathlon, so when you've been around that for long, people get to know you. Started off in obviously short course for quite a while. It wasn't until about 2004 that I became an Ironman, and obviously Ironman is a fairly popular in triathlon field, and I guess I made my name more in Ironman than I did in short course, something that I was suited for.
How does someone go from no training to deciding to run or participate in triathlons, and then the same year of that decision, qualifying for Kona?
I suppose I did short course for a long time though.
2004,
from doing short course to starting doing Ironman, the decision was, it's what we all wanted to do. You know, to go to Kona is the holy grail of the sport. You see it on TV. Those lava fields are—it's horrible, but it attracts everybody to go there. So, yeah, it took me quite a while before I decided to do an Ironman. And I guess that some of the years in the sports, when I picked up Ironman, I had a fairly big base. So, 2004 at Foster Ironman, I was very lucky to do my first Ironman and qualify in that same year. And so, my first Hawaii was 2004.
So what was the timeline in terms of deciding, yep, I'm now going to be training for an Ironman, and how long was it before the Forster Ironman?
I made the decision the year before. It was after I won a world title, Olympic distance world title, and thought, well, it's time to move on to something different, more of a challenge. So I started about 8 months out in the training before Forster to get ready. I mean, I did too much training as an Olympic distance racer anyhow. Definitely did more than what you need to do, but I enjoyed the training side of it. So, especially cycling, it wasn't unusual for me to, you know, do 140Ks ride, and I'm only training for a 40K Olympic distance ride. So, I had a good background base of riding, even as a kid. So, that's always been my strongest leg.
Yeah. And in 2014, you did Iron 5 for 55, which was completing 5 Ironmans when you turned 55. And you set the goal to raise $55,000 for the Cancer Council. Can you tell us about that mission?
Yeah, that was certainly was a new change again. The concept came about, my mum lost her battle with cancer on the 5th of February back in 2006. So she went through a lot of pain and suffering for that, with the cancer, the skin cancer. She thought she just had a cold sore on her lip. It didn't go away for a while, and unfortunately it grew into a fairly aggressive cancer. She suffered bad. So that's where I decided to do five Ironman to resemble that, the pain and suffering that mum went through. And the 55 came about, not that I turned 55. Unfortunately, my dad lost his life when he was 55, trying to save a mate when he was lobstering up in on the Murray. I suppose I turned 55 that year as well. And it was pretty special because actually on the first race, 23rd of March, I actually was 55 on that day for the first one as well. So yeah, that's how the whole Iron 5 for 55 came about. It was something different. I had a great mate, Tony Brady, that made up a website. It was all about buy a second, save a life. So people tried to guess my finishing times for each one of the legs, like the swim, bike, run and overall time. And if they got the closest to my time there, my great sponsors like yourself, they gave prizes for those people that, got closest to the winning time. So, he designed a matrix on a website, and, he finished up raising over 40,000 through the Iron 5 for 55. So, it was pretty successful. Pretty bloody hard, I can tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us about the first one.
Yeah, to get the hardest part was getting actually people to follow us. So I also set myself a pretty hefty goal of trying to win each one, and also set course records at each one as well to make people say, he won't do that, so they'll follow me. The first one was at Melbourne. On my birthday, it was pretty goosebumpy sort of experience. And having the thoughts of both mum and my dad out there. And, when dad lost his life at 55, I thought, he had a pretty good life. 55 is, fairly old, but here I was at 55 and it's feeling like a 21-year-old. So, I've got a lot more to go ahead. So 55 is not old, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. And tell us about Cairns that year.
Cairns was hard because obviously you had Melbourne in March. Port Mac was in May, so it was only 3 weeks after Port Mac, which is a tough course. I had to push hard at Port Mac to get the course record, which I did, and also at Melbourne. It was really hard, and it was a hard, windy day as well. I was struggling on the run big time. I think the weather turned there as well. It was raining and just wanted to pull out. Not very often I felt like that. It was pretty emotional, but it's just the thought of mum and the pain that she went through.
Yeah.
It just kept me going. And, I'm glad I didn't pull out. I was so tempted, but, again, I was lucky to win my age group and set another course record. So, the mind is powerful than the body, and if you can coach your mind to push through the pain barrier and keep going, luckily, for me, I was rewarded with the win.
Have you ever felt like that again, becoming close to giving up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all go through an Ironman with lots of emotions, some stronger than the others. I've never felt the desire to stop so much there. I felt pain more, but for me, I think it was emotion of just the whole Iron 5 for 55 concept was pretty draining, putting it all together and trying to raise that money, and I think the third one was really taking its toll on me. I don't think I've felt as bad as that as far as wanting to pull out, but I've certainly felt a lot more pain than that.
Yeah. And so what's your memory of that coming in to the end of that year and having completed five Ironmans?
Was the fourth one, and as you say, running down the Alihi Drive is something special. You can't explain it to you. Go over there and do it yourself. It's the whole Alihi Drive. It goes from nearly 800 meters of crowds all the way along. It's right next to the ocean as you go along there, and it's just amazing. Busso, the fifth one, hometown crowd, not my hometown, but having Australian crowd there, mm-hmm. and being the last one, and yeah, everybody out in the course knew me, everybody was cheering me on, and yeah, unfortunately, Kona, I didn't get the course record. I did win my age group there, but didn't break the course record. So Busso was out to make sure I broke the course record. And I did. I smashed it there, so it was pretty.
And you smashed it.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
The four right. course records out of the five, I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. All right, well, let's get technical for a second here for all the triathletes out there. What does a week in the peak of your triathlon training look like?
It does vary a fair bit. My peak volume-wise for Ironman, we start with Saturday. It's usually ranges from 140 to 180 k on the Saturday, and then come back and usually run 5 to 10 k's off the bike, much further than that. And then Sunday is usually just a 50 k easy spin on the flats on the bike, and just a swim in the ocean as well. And that swim could vary between 2 to 4 k's. Might go halfway to the jetty and back, or go jetty to jetty and into the Grange. Monday is usually a recovery day. I don't own a car. My wife has a car, and I ride everywhere. So Monday is my recovery ride to work normally. That's about it. Sometimes I might go a bit further to make it a bit longer. And then Monday is usually just a jog up to 10 k's, just at a controlled pace. Tuesdays is up early, hitting the hills before work. Go up Norton Summit, across to Montague, down, back home, grab my pack and off to work. And I usually end up with around about 100 k's in that morning before work. And then Tuesday is usually a bit of a speed run, a tempo run. And that could be anything from 400s, 800s to 1k's, depending on where I am. But it's usually between 6 to 10 k's. Wednesday is in the pool. Monday morning was in the pool too. Wednesday's in the pool. And then Wednesday's usually a bit of a longer run, sort of 10 to 15 at sort of easy with some sort of run throughs. Thursday's easy a TT session, sort of go out towards the Outer Harbour Way. And that could be only around about 50 k's, but it's pretty solid. And then Friday, obviously, back in the pool in the morning. And, yeah, Friday's usually a sort of another 10k a run. And that varies depending how I feel. Sometimes it could be a bit of speed work in there as well. And that's it. It's sort of the second job, more or less.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us what your taper looks like.
Yeah, so I start from Ironman 2 weeks out. Obviously, reduce the distance and up the tempo. I've noticed with the, obviously, as I've sort of aged a bit, I've had to cut back on the running a little bit. So that's the first thing I really cut back on is the running. The sort of second week of the taper is, yeah, I don't completely stop doing anything. I do something every day. I usually have the Friday before a race that I might do absolutely zero, or might be a little swim. And then the Saturday before a race, I actually go out and do a little bit of each leg, a small swim with a bit of speed work, not too taxing, on the bike with just a few build up to get everything spinning before I wrap the bike. And then just a run that might be just one to two Ks, again, just building up just to make sure I feel good.
Yeah.
Doing something on a Saturday is better than not doing anything at all. A lot of athletes will do nothing, just use that as a rest day. And I found that I'm a bit sluggish and I'd rather do something to keep me fired up, ready for the race. And a lot of pros do that as well. You see them out there doing the same thing.
Yeah, but really you think it's a personal thing, whatever works?
Yes, yes, whatever works. You know, we are different.
Yeah.
Different things work for different people.
What's your recovery look like?
Yeah, after an Ironman, it's all about reconnecting with family. It's a pretty selfish sport, Ironman. It's a lot of devoted time to yourself out there training, so it's time to give back. And obviously, I still do a little bit of training, but it's more social training. It's what I call recovery training. I don't stop completely. I go out and do a social ride, a swim. I tend not to do any running. I go for walks and stuff like that. I might even walk up in the hills in the second week just to break it up a little bit. But yes, it's about enjoying that experience with that Ironman and reconnecting with your family. I think it's the most important part.
Take us through race day.
Yeah, race day. One of the things people ask me, race day, do you still get nervous? And actually, I'm glad I still do get nervous.
Yeah.
Two reasons. That helps with the bodily functions as well by being nervous. You get a good clean out.
Keeps you regular.
Yeah. But also, if I'm not nervous, it's time to give up the sport.
Yeah.
I've still got that anxiety about the race line. And after years of practicing different food and that, the best thing for me is just a couple pieces of toast with jam on it. That's what I use. And obviously white bread. And then I just have a bit of water and just a bit of infinite carbohydrate mix to sip before race. Not too much. You don't want to go into the race too bloated. Mm. And sort of finish up coming back up again. So, yeah, and the same routine, depending on weather, depending on if you can get in the water. Most of the times I go for a bit of a swim before race start. Again, just to get fired up. You don't have to do too much. It's an Ironman. You don't have to fire a whole body up because it's a long day. But it just helps to take away a bit of the nerves as well and get your wetsuit a little bit wet. And also helps, obviously, it's hard to line up for toilet. So, sorry, Ocean. We all know we're clean that wetsuit. better off doing it in the ocean than standing by the side.
Exactly. That's right, because I've heard it can be quite full on. People are literally swimming on top of you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's changed a fair bit over the last couple of years. Hawaii even has changed. Hawaii and a lot of Ironman is just a mass wave start. And Hawaii's horrendous because you've got 2,000 athletes in a very close proximity. It's not a very big swim start there. So, yeah, if you unfortunately get caught up and then get pushed under, even for me being a commercial diver and spent years of my life in the water, it can be quite stressful. I remember one year I decided to start right up near the front and to the right-hand side, and I got pushed out underneath what they call the lane, sort of the buoys with a rope, so you're not supposed to go to the other side of them. But I finished up on the other side, and then the lifeguards told me to shoot back across, so I had to duck down underneath the rope. But I couldn't get back up because there's so many people swimming over the top trying to get back up through everybody. I kept getting pushed under. And I thought, Jesus, that was pretty scary. And, for someone like me that spent so much time in the water, I feel for the people that haven't got that much experience. So,
yeah.
Nowadays, though, they have wave starts for each age group. So it still can be quite, a bit of a punch up. People have come out with black eyes and stuff like that and, cuts their lips and that sort of stuff. So it still can become aggressive. Because they are the world titles and, everybody wants to do their best. So, unfortunately, some people don't take the sport as it is and want to win at all costs. And they'll do things like push under and stuff like that and pull you back and hit you and all sorts of things happen out there.
You've experienced that?
Yeah, I've come out with black eye before.
Oh, wow.
Bit, so, yeah.
And is that a fist or a foot?
Sometimes you don't even know. <There's something laughs> And sometimes a lot of times it's just an accident.
But yeah.
Some of them, you think that they've done them on purpose. So, yeah.
I read in an interview when you were doing Cairns Ironman, you were running alongside 2-time Hawaii world champion, Chris McCormick. How did you feel about that?
Oh, mate. He's been my idol and one of the reasons I was sort of in the sport and followed him. And I've had the privilege of actually racing alongside him as a pro when I had a pro license for 1 year. But have that privilege of actually riding past him. As an age grouper, we start, I think back then it was around about 10 minutes, might have been 5 minutes. Is it 5 or 10? It's 15 minutes now in the swim. And I remember for that day, I was just having a blinder on the bike. Everything just seemed to fit and I was passing. I passed all the pro females, and I started to pass some of the pro men. And yeah, about 170k mark, and I think on the bike I passed Chris McCormack, and I thought, oh my god, this is unreal.
So you realised at the time during that you were riding past?
Yeah, yeah. and I said g'day.
Hi.
Not in a cheeky way, but yeah. Then yeah. Into transition and yeah, come out, and then yeah, was running side by side with Chris, and it was amazing. And like we come to a drink station. The drink station's every 2Ks, and you know he actually let me go in front and said, "You go and to get a drink first." And the pace was by far a lot faster than I can normally run for an Ironman pace. But at that stage, I didn't care. There's not going to be a chance for ever in Ironman to run next to a two-time world champion, yeah. A Hawaii world champion. And here I am on the run leg, side by side. And I think it was around about the 10K mark. And he said to me, if we keep this pace up, we'll do a sub three. And then the alarm bell started ringing. there's no way I can run a sub three. And if I want to finish this, I'm just going to have to say, you know, back it off. So I said goodbye to him, and yeah, I had that memory for the rest of my life. And the only unfortunate part about it, we had a camera, motorbike camera, and they were on it for quite a while. And I was hoping to get some footage of that, but I never did. Yeah. So that would be good to have that footage of me running side by side with Chris McCormack. But unfortunately, I missed the opportunity of getting that. But I've got the memory.
Exactly. It'll never fade.
No,
it
never
will. Incredible. Did you catch up with him afterwards?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's lucky. I did have a blind of a race, even though I did smash myself in that first 10K of the run. I still finished up. I came 80th overall of the whole field. So I was pretty stoked with that. You know, I think there's over 1,000 athletes. And so I beat a lot of the pro men, pro women. So
amazing. That's so fantastic. And tell me, obviously, when you're running alongside Chris, is that pure adrenaline and joy, or is that like competitiveness and ego? Or is it like a mixture of all of it?
Yeah, I don't think it was ego or competitiveness. It was just in awe. I really was in awe and just could not believe I was running side by side by a two-time world champion and someone I looked up to, you know, all my life as a triathlete. And now he was the best. And here I am at the end of an Ironman, start of a run, but obviously, you know, we've re-swam 3.8 and 180K on the bike, and I'm running side by side. I was astounded. I mean,
yeah.
There was another age grouper not far that he was behind as well. He actually caught up to us and he was pretty amazed as well, but then he dropped off pretty quickly. And so, yeah, I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. So I guess it's safe to say that was one of your best memories.
Yeah, there's been a few, but that's definitely up there. I mean, it's, it was great. I've got goosebumps now thinking about it. And it was my own personal feeling of awe, I think. It's just, you know, how many people as an age group get a chance in any sport that you can run or ride or do anything next to a world champion?
With the best, yeah, that's with right. The, yeah.
To be on the course and actually to be running side by side, it's just, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, fantastic. So what are some of your other greatest memories?
I think I did a half Ironman back then, it was called, it was 70.3. And the same thing, I rode past another famous pro, Jason Shortest, on the bike, and actually came into the run leg and T2 leading the whole course. So I was first off the bike, so that was pretty amazing. And I finished up coming third overall. So Jason finished up running past me on the run leg, and another pro ran past, but I came third overall. So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I was pretty stoked with that. Vanuatu, I won a competition to my age group. To go over there and race as an age group, but I finished up beating all the pros and coming first and won the whole race overall. So that was another big highlight.
Absolutely.
Another one here is in Adelaide. My first pro race, the duathlon national titles. I came sixth overall there as well. And after the first run, which is not my strongest, it was a 10K run, I was 2 minutes off the pack because it's draft legal as well. So they ran 32 minutes for the 10K, the pack of about 10. And I was 2 minutes behind, and it was a multi-loop around Vic Park and around that area there. So we had all the Adelaide crowd supporting. And I remember them cheering me on. And I actually made up that two-minute deficit by myself and then rode past the pack of 10 and came into the area, the actual run in the lead there as well. So that was pretty amazing. But the most amazing thing, I suppose, is just recently with Sid, that's something that, I can't go through that. It's just an amazing experience for him to become an Ironman. It's one of my best.
We'll definitely talk more about that. But before we get onto it, what can you recall as being maybe one of the toughest moments that you've had to pull yourself through?
The one that obviously I finished up in the worst condition was a race over in Borneo. It wasn't an Ironman, it wasn't a 70.3, it was only just an Olympic distance race. And unfortunately, the swim over there was in a polluted lake, and I swallowed a bit too much of the water. And as soon as I got out on the bike, I was bringing up all the contents. I couldn't keep any water down. And Borneo is very hot and humid. And I knew when I got off the bike and onto the run, my wife was there. And as I ran out, I said to her, I'm in trouble. And I can sort of remember that, but then don't remember much at all of the run. I've seen a video afterwards, and the German film crew, they came back and showed us afterwards, and it was on the run, about the 8K mark. And I put me close up, and they can see on my lips, I was saying, I've got to finish. And there's another group running towards me from the other end, and I've actually gone off the road, off the side of the paddock, and then came back, and obviously I was seeing triple or whatever. But across the finish line, and had went straight into convulsions, and I would wake up in a Borneo hospital, which is not a good place to wake up in. So that was, I suppose, it was pretty tough, but I don't actually recall much of it because it was just so dehydrated and my mind wasn't clear. But unfortunately, there was $2,000 prize money for veteran, and I think that's why I was so determined to finish, because I wanted to pay for the holiday.
Yeah.
If I didn't finish, my wife would be killing me.
Wow. And so you don't remember wanting to finish? Recall?
I was just saying, I remember speaking to my wife coming out of the run and remember the start of the run, but I can't recall any of that part. I can't recall when they showed me going off the road, you know, obviously seeing all these people coming towards me. Can't remember crossing the finish line, anything like that.
So what year was that?
Oh, that would have been, I reckon, at least, back in 2000, I think it was. Back in some of the, so it's a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So after an experience like that, how do you then go into your next race?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was scary waking up in the hospital. But I think a bit like some people that have bike accidents, they don't recall what happened. So when you don't recall exactly what happened, it never happened. Yeah, that's right. I'm okay.
Exactly. Next.
I suppose I made sure that obviously, you know, it could have been a lot worse. There's been instances of people with severe hydration, have lost part of the intestines and stuff like that. So muscle meltdown. So I was lucky I didn't have any permanent damage. So, you know, obviously I don't want to push myself to that extreme again. But again, that mind sometimes and what you think is stronger than what your body is. So hopefully I don't push myself that hard again and I can remember. And will I pull out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Exactly, because have you ever pulled out of a race?
I have now, unfortunately. A few years back at Geelong, my first ever race I didn't finish. Bloody tried hard, I can tell you. In the swim, I got my goggles kicked off and got a bit of water in my goggles. I kept swimming with that water in there, didn't worry about clearing it. And unfortunately, that bit of water was near all the boats where we swim through there. And someone must have tipped over either some paint thinners or some sort of chemical. And that I just thought I had a bit of grit in my eye. I did one lap of the bike and I was in severe pain. I couldn't see out of that eye. The vision was gone. So I pulled into the transition because you had to come back. It's a multi-loop, two-loop bike app. So I pulled in there and got first aid to come and have a look at my eye and see if they could squirt it out, because I was using my water bottle trying to squirt it out, and I thought there must have been a bit of sand or something stuck in there. And it was so painful. And they got in there, they said, there's nothing in there. And then they gave me some drops, some painkiller drops. And as soon as they put it in there, I'm good as gold. And so I took off again. They gave me these drops. And they said, you know, if the pain comes back, put them in there. And I only got about a K up the road and the pain was back. And so I went to the next drink station and got someone there to put a couple more drops in my eye. And again, I only went another 5Ks and the pain was back. And I tried to put the drops in my eye again from the side of the road, but obviously I was missing. And then the drops ran out. And then my other eye was starting to play up. I couldn't actually see anymore. And so my vision was starting to go, and I just said, I can't see. I had to head back. So I turned around and then, sort of rode back the best I could and got back in there and, had to finish up in hospital. And the whole surface of my eye got burnt off from the chemicals. So that's why it was, it's completely gone. So it was very, very painful. And I literally could not finish the race, even though I tried.
What does that even mean? The surface of your eye got burnt off.
Yes. The whole first layer of the eye.
That membrane. The
chemical, yeah. But it's amazing. We're lucky we had Simon Lakey is an eye surgeon. He was doing the race as well. And after I came back from hospital, he came and had a look at me and he says, I need to have a look at that as well. So we went back up to hospital and he got me out there, and that was mushroom in about 4 hours after the race, and already in that 4 hours he could see around the sides it's starting to grow back.
Oh, already. Really?
Yeah, so the eye's a pretty amazing thing.
Wow, this is 4 hours and it's growing back.
That's around the sides, you can see the regrowth of this layer. So yeah, I had to have an eye patch on for a while, but it was very, very painful. I don't wish that upon anybody.
Wow, that's incredible. And did you tell the organisers? Like, obviously, I'm sure they wouldn't have known that that's what's happening in the waters, but...
Yeah, so it's actually happened there a couple of times, apparently.
Oh.
So it has happened before, and the press did contact me afterwards, but obviously trying to do a follow-up story, but, I never got back to them. I left it at that, but, it's unfortunately some of the risks we do even swim in open water, but, hopefully the boaties, if it was that, I presume it must have been some sort of chemical that's come off a boat to do it.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate I just picked it up at the wrong time going through there, and by not clearing my goggles and just leaving the water in there with that bit of chemical, it done some damage to my eye. But as I say, the eyes are amazing and didn't have any side effects at all.
Yeah, that's great to hear. What's the secret to a good transition?
Yeah, I mean, obviously rehearsal, knowing exactly, where your bike is, trying to find something. That's where anything can go wrong, is just finding your bike. I know that because
you lost it. Is it like at the airport with your suitcase, how you tie like a rainbow ribbon or something so you can see it from a distance?
Yeah, well, people used to have balloons and stuff like that, but they stopped people doing that, as you can imagine. It's pretty messy.
Balloons everywhere.
Yeah. But I had an old 70s towel that I used to use when you used to put something down on the ground, and you can't do that anymore, and obviously in Ironman you can't, but it's just a matter of looking at any sort of landmark, a pole, nearest tree or anything like that, where your bike's racked, and obviously knowing what bike number your rack is in as well, because they all look the same. And that's there. Sometimes, coming out of the swim and from being sort of in that laying down position to standing up, the old head doesn't think quite straight, and you can lose quite a bit of time finding your bike. All the rest of it's Ironman's pretty good. You have people that pull off your wetsuit for you, and when you come back off the bike, they take your bike away from you, so you have to worry about racking it and just go straight into the run tent. I don't actually use elastic laces. A lot of people use elastic laces in the run. I actually spend the time to do my shoes up. It's a bit slower, but I find that way get less blisters, because with elastic laces, once your feet get wet, they move around a fair bit. And then, obviously you can finish up with worse blisters and you're going to lose more time than just spending that doing that laces. And it holds your feet a lot more firm as well with laces and having elastic laces.
Yeah. Tell us about Sid and that journey.
Yes, poor Sid. Unfortunately, he was training for his first Ironman in Victor Harbour. He always tells the story that he'd been down his first child. It was his second day, and he changed the nappy the first time. He thought he'd go up for a ride up in the hills around the back of Victor Harbour. He didn't actually know what happened, but unfortunately, yeah, they found him and became a quadriplegic. And obviously, anyone knows Sid, he's a race director of the Victor Harbour Triathlons. And, you know, when we were down there, we always talk about Ironman and, you know, poor Sid. You know, he's upset him a bit sometimes, especially Hawaii. And that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to do an Ironman, and, you know, obviously he wanted to go to Hawaii as well. So the nearest thing is he always kept pestering me, said, look, I'm going to come over and watch your race in Hawaii. I want to see you do it. And I said, yeah, not a problem. And the more I got to think about it, I always remember Rick and Dick Hoyt, father and son. My son had cerebral palsy. And I was there 1 year when they finished the Kona Ironman. And I thought, well, it's pretty boring watching Ironman, so Sid come to TAFE, and he used to talk to the sport and rec students as a guest speaker. And he was there one day, and I approached him and said, look, Sid, I'm going to take you over to Kona. You're not going to watch me. I'm going to tow you around. And, you know, straight away, he just couldn't believe it. You know, tears running down his eyes. And I knew straight away I made that right decision then to see that emotion on his face. And then the next part was the planning.
Yeah, because it took a lot of planning, didn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it had the training. It's going to be hard with Sid down in Victor Harbour and me here in Adelaide. And obviously with Sid, you can't send him hours and hours out training for his body to cope. So, you know, Wilson was born. Wilson was my training partner. Wilson was an old wetsuit that I stuffed full of bottles and wine bladders full of water and everything to make the same weight as Sid, which is just over 70 kilos. So Sid was my training, and Wilson was my dummy for Sid. So I spent a lot of hours tying that around, and I can tell you I got a lot of looks. Adelaide, especially on the run. I used to run along Henley Beach on the Esplanade and that, and there's pushing this chair with this wetsuit. And how I got the name Wilson is dummy that I used to use at work, me and overboard. So I already had the wetsuit full of foam and stuff like that. And I had a netball head painted with a face up. And sometimes I used to chuck that overboard in the Pabo handling course. The head used to fall out. So I'd be yelling out, Wilson! The dummy got his name, Wilson. And so yeah, you can see that with a netball face on there, a bright orange netball face with the looks that I got was pretty strange. But yeah, that was hard. Any time we had any sort of interview or anything down at Victor Harbour, I'd ride down there with Wilson towing it. And so that'd be a 200K round trip. And that was a long day. I put a lot of effort in training so I could make sure I was going to finish it with Sid. Wasn't going to put him through that and not finish. But unfortunately, about 3 weeks out before Hawaii, after I qualified and got my spot, and they finished up giving Sid a spot as well, so we were approved. And as you know, we got a lot of press about it as well on the project and front page of the Sunday paper, and it was all go. Sid was a star. He was loving life. You know? It was good to see Sid change as well. He lost a lot of weight. He went from about 80 kilos down to 70 kilos, which is going to make my life a lot easier. That was very disappointing, but he got what he wanted. He finished up coming over and I still raced. Wasn't how I planned to race, but I still raced and he got to watch me. And Joanna, the race director over there, they gave Sid and all his carers and that, and my wife, VIP treatment and the doctor. So that would have cost him a fortune, but they got to the whole VIP treatment. So he could see me at the finish line, and I always remember that Hawaii finish line. I took my medal off and put around his neck and said, I'm not going to get that finish medal back until I put a Ironman medal around your neck. So, yeah, that came to fruition next year at Busso. Got approval from the organisers there to tow Sid around. And I'm glad it actually finished up that way as well, because I don't think I would have managed to finish at Hawaii. It was a tough day. The wind was pretty strong. And the chair where I tow behind would sit in is like a parachute. You know, it catches the wind. And so, you know, I think it was over 10 hours that year. So you only got 17 hours to do it. So I don't think I would have made it. So having it at Busso, it's a flat course. Having the home crowd there again, you know, the Australians there was just amazing. Yeah, I can get emotional now. I mean,
yeah,
the swim, all the build up to it, and then finally getting sit in the water. We were next to all the pros at the swim start, so they started off first around about 10 minutes, and then the females started about 2 minutes before us, and then it was all the what they call the special athletes. So there's people that are blind, people have lost legs and stuff like that. And there's about five of us, I think, started that next wave start. So we started before all the age groupers. And, you know, I wanted to push out pretty hard in that first lap to get a bit of clearance so the age groupers didn't want to swim over top of us. And, yeah, it was coming back on just before the start of the second lap, and next time I passed a female pro. Geez, I must be having a good swim here. I've caught up to them, and it was good until we started to pass some of the age groupers that had started on their lap. So it got a bit messy on the second lap, and I sort of went out really wide and came in because he wanted to get Sid wet, because he actually feels the cold. It's not the heat, it's the cold that's the issue. And so yeah, out of the swim and then onto the bike, which I was dreading. Because they say that's definitely the hardest. So the bike leg is my strongest leg. Now in Ironman, towing Sid, but it was my weakest leg. So I had to make sure that I got in on the cutoff time of the bike, because I knew once I got off there, I'd have plenty of time for the run to make it. So it was always going to be a push. But the first lap of the bike was amazing. I think I averaged around about 24 kilometres an hour, which is, you know, it's fast towing Sid. But the second lap, the wind really picked up. And I remember I'm doing, you know, 14 kilometres an hour, riding as hard as I could, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you cannot give up. So I really had to hammer myself. And I came into the run thinking, oh, my God, I've got to run a marathon now. But, again, it's amazing. It didn't take me long to recover. And the crowd, oh, my God. Once you get on that run, it was just amazing, because Busso, you do a four-lap loop, so it's only 5Ks either way, so you just – you know, there's people everywhere. You know, even if I was buggered, the crowd just pumped us up.
Carry you.
And, you know, even Sid, you know, a couple of times there, you could hear in his voice, he was getting emotional and that. And I remember it was about a K, just in a K out, you get your last band. And after I put the band on, I sort of pulled alongside Sid and stopped and just said, this is it, mate. We're going to make it. And, yeah, he started crying straight away, and I said, when we get to that finish shoot, mate, we won't be running it, we'll be just walking down it.
And
crossing that line, and just the crowd. And then Caroline Stephan, the female winner, she gave me the medal, because normally like a pro or the race director puts medals around. She handed me the medal and said, you know, put it around Sid, and yeah. So bend down and to see his tears in his eyes, and put around and say, well, Sid, and then Pete Murray to call out, yeah, Sid, you are an Ironman, is something that no matter how many world titles, any other races, nothing will ever replace that feeling. And I've got footage of that too, so.
You do?
Yeah.
You go.
I have that for life.
Except that one.
And even after the finish, when you go into what they call the recovery tent, where all the food is and all the athletes are there, we walked in there and there was a standing ovation, you know, all the athletes, even though they're buggered, they got off their seats and just clapped. And that was pretty amazing, both Sid and myself. So
yeah.
There's a lot of respect from everybody out in the course. So,
of yeah, course. Great.
And to, yeah, and to see Sid become his dream, you know.
He's
an Ironman. And, I mean, he realised how bloody tough it is too, as well, because out on that bike there, because we were out there for nearly 8 hours, he's saying, are we ever going to get off this bloody bike? When's it going to finish? And he's just sitting there. Crazy bastard.
Was there a bit of that, like that communication between the two of you out there?
Yeah, it's hard on the bike. It's not too bad when you're going with the wind, but against the wind with the wind noise and that, it's sometimes hard to hear him. But, yeah, at times, you know, he yells out, I can hear him. We didn't have any sort of communication. You know, if I did it again, obviously I'd have some sort of voice communication. We could talk to each other.
Yeah.
We did stop a couple of times on the bike, just temperature checks and stuff like that. We had space blankets. We actually had to put blankets on him, believe me or not, in bus A. Yeah. I was hot, but he was getting cold because he's just sitting there. And with the wind of the bike,
of course,
he got cold. So we had to put space blankets around him. So we did stop a couple of times on the bike and had a chat. On the run, though, I can hear him clearly. You know, obviously, I can see him more on the run as well. So
yeah,
and
he's hurry up,
go faster.
Yep,
and he's always giving me a hard time. He's got a very dry sense of humour, so and it's good. I mean, that helps as well. And believe it or not, we got a bloody flat tire on the run leg. It was lucky there's someone there, and I had a quick change of the tire and got going again. So yeah, I mean that was good, and yeah, the finish. And something that I know it's glad. I mean, a lot of people are there as well to see that, which in Hawaii, it wouldn't be as special as far as so many people that knew us and knew Sid to be there to congratulate him. Yeah.
Yeah, and all the challenges it took, because obviously it's one thing to train for it, but it's a whole nother thing to have, you know, the gear for it and know exactly, you know, the dimensions and weight of things that you're going to be pulling, pushing and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, I travel pretty lightly. I normally go for a race on my bike and just a backpack. Sid, oh, my God.
A little more than a backpack?
We had to have a trailer. So, yeah, the logistics were, you know, especially going to Hawaii, it was huge. You know, obviously, you need to have a lift. You need to have a special chair for him to go to the toilet. You need his normal wheelchair. Then there's a race chair. So we had five big wheelchair type bags just for his luggage. But luckily there, with the airports, you don't have to pay for any disability. You ain't got a wheelchair on it. You don't have to pay for it. So that saved us a lot of money. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had to hire big vans and that to get all the gear in. And so just imagine we went to Hawaii where we had 10 other people as well. You know, we had a doctor and his wife. Sid's son went. And then four carers as well. So it's a big cruise, and just made much luggage there was.
Yeah.
I like charging you for luggage. So, but it was all worth it. No, definitely something that I'm very happy that I did. And I think I say to everybody, winning world titles is great. It's a good feeling, but doing something like that, Iron 555, is a good cause for that. But nothing will ever replace that moment I put that medal around Sid.
And
he fulfilled his dream that had been taken away from him. And he thought he'd never get that medal. And that's, I see it when I go down to this place, it's hanging up and pride of joy, that medal there, and the photos and the memories he's got now as well. So it gave him another lease of life. You know? He's been a quadriplegic for a very long time now. And that changed his life. It gave him a real buzz. And I'm very proud that I would be part of it.
Absolutely. It is an incredible story. So congratulations. Yeah.
Don't forget, you helped me get there too.
I did. I was very proud to be a part of that. Well, a little bit a part of it.
You felt how much I smashed those leg muscles of mine.
Oh,
because you,
yeah.
You
had to, yeah. I still to this day don't understand how you put yourself through all that, but you're a machine. Mm-hmm. Has Sid... Has he approached you and gone, oh, so when's the next one?
Yes, he's always ringing up. He said, what about this race? Or what about that race?
And, yeah.
You know, we didn't stop after that, though. I mean, we did a lot of lead-up races before Busso as well and Hawaii. You know, we've done a few half Ironmans. We've done a City to Bays. We've done a City to Surf. We've done half marathons running, the Clare half marathon. So we've done, you know, quite a few races now with Sid, and you know, I love it. And I will continue doing races with Sid. Unfortunately, as we know, with COVID-19, everything's been put to a halt. But we'll get back out there again. He's really keen to do some more.
Yeah.
Will I do another Ironman with Sid? He's got his medal.
That's all right. You got your memories.
Yeah. It definitely was something that was very, very hard. And,
yeah.
Yes, my body certainly took a beating.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. I think I get more enjoyment, and it was hard for him as well.
Of course.
people didn't realise, you know, every bump he felt as well.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate being a quadriplegic, you think they don't feel pain, but they do. You know, he feels pain. So, you know, he bouncing around the chair a couple of times, had the readjusted chair because he was getting pushed up against the side. So, you know, he was uncomfortable. He just wanted to get out of that chair just as much as I wanted to get off the bike. So, you know, once we got there and we got him out of that racing chair into his normal wheelchair, it was a relief for him as well. So,
yeah.
But so, yeah, we'll do shorter ones. He loves the 2.5. We did the Sufferfest at Murray Bridge a couple of times. So we'll do a couple more half Ironmans and, you know, he loves the running races because we can communicate a lot more and you can give him more shit.
Exactly. Yeah, he definitely likes that.
Yeah. And we've, like, the Wings for Life, that's a great thing that they have at Vic Park. Unfortunately, it got cancelled this year. That's where you try and outrace a car. So it starts all around the world at the same time. And then you just keep going until a virtual car catches you. In some places in the world, they actually have proper cars. So we've done that a couple of times and we'll do that again. So he loves that. That usually starts a big park around about 8 o'clock at night and you usually finish around about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. So that's a great event. And that raises money for people with disabilities, wheelchairs, spinal injuries.
Yeah. Tell us about your recent surgery. You've just had neck surgery.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately I've had a problem with my neck way back since 2004. It's a white water accident with work. And went down this fairly big rapid and unfortunately hit something under the water. And head took a pretty nasty blow. And yeah, finished up, I had a pretty severe prolapse, C5-6. And put me out of action for a little while. But yeah, managed to live with it. Had quite a few relapses throughout the years, some more severe than others, but always sort of recovered. Obviously having cortisone injections and stuff like that. But this last one, unfortunately, I had one back in 2018, but it was pretty bad on a bushwalk. That took a bit longer to recover. And a year later, I did it again. Just lifting some luggage into the back of the trailer. Just felt a little bit of a go, bit of a burning sensation, but not too severe. But it just kept getting worse and worse to the stage. That's how I lost all strength in my left arm. Lots of pins and needles, lost all my reflex in my left arm. So I got to the stage that I was lucky all elective surgery had been cancelled. But because I was losing all that sensation, I lost muscle. I lost 3 centimetres in my left arm and right. So they put me into urgent elective surgery. So I finished up with 2 artificial discs. When I went in there, it's going to be 1 artificial disc and 1 fusion. But I'm very lucky that my vertebrae is very healthy. So it was a first for him. He put in 2 artificial discs. So first were for my neurosurgeon. So I was very lucky. And the actual rehab's been a lot better than it would have been with having 1 fusion and 1 artificial disc. So, yeah, and I'm actually pain-free for the first time since 2004. I don't realise how you can live with pain all your life and how much it can change to have no pain at all.
And you know, not only live your life with pain, but, like, all these incredible achievements, like Ironmans, whilst you're in pain.
Well, obviously I must love pain.
Yeah.
I've put up for so long and I want to keep putting body through more pain by doing Ironman. But,
Is there something in it that goes, like, if I put myself through more pain, and I know you're not thinking about it as pain, but if I put my body through this, and that is your Ironman training or whatever it is, it almost takes your mind off the fact that there is something happening in the neck?
Yeah, it's like anything. The mind's pretty powerful. I mean, there's been a lot of studies on pain. And the more you think about pain, the more painful it's going to be. And so if you can do things that takes your mind away from that problem and that pain and make believe it's not there, it does take it away. Right? It's only when you start thinking about the pain that it becomes more painful.
Mm.
So, you know, even though you do live with it and you get used to it, if you do sit down and think about it, it'll be there. So I think by doing Ironman, and obviously it's a different sort of pain, with the training and what you do, it takes your mind away from it. Mm. And I think it's actually helped me. It's made my bones definitely stronger. And if I wasn't doing Ironman and I was a normal 60-year-old, I'd be having 2 fusions. I would have that bone degeneration, bone disease. But I've got very healthy bones. I think that's obviously from exercise, living a healthy lifestyle. And so I've come out, I've been rewarded for doing all that training.
Absolutely. What is tougher, training for an Ironman or race day?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think about 8 weeks out from an Ironman where you've really started to increase the intensity and you've got all those moles in your legs and you're just so tired. You're thinking, you know, why the hell am I doing this? And you're thinking, and you're getting up early, you know, 4:30 every morning to go out and train, and you just think, oh my God, especially when it's obviously you're doing it for Hawaii where you've got to do it through the middle of winter and it's raining and it's cold and you know, you're just out there all day on the bike. What the hell? if you look at the social side of it as well, you know, I do enjoy the training. We've got a great club at the Lakers Triathlon Club, and I've got some great friends that I train with, and that makes it a lot more enjoyable. Racing, oh my God, doing an Ironman, yeah, you have to be crazy. I don't know why people do it. and if you push yourself, you know, it's obviously going to be a lot more painful. Unless you finish an Ironman, you cannot explain to people that haven't finished one that feeling of actually crossing that finish line and being, your name being called out, Kevin Ferguson, you are an Ironman. You know, it's just, I suppose you put up, you know, the challenges of training, the challenges of life, that commitment you've gone through to finally cross that finish line. It is an amazing achievement, you know, to finish an Ironman. It's not easy. And if you look at 1% of the world finish an Ironman, you know, you're in that 1%. So it is a fantastic feeling. It is hard. And every Ironman, you will have times where you think, what the hell am I doing this? I've never had a perfect Ironman. You know? There's always something going wrong, or there's times you just think, I just can't do it. But you get through them and you keep pushing on and you do it. So when you're out there, you just got to keep saying to yourself, even though you want to stop and walk. And when I see people walking, I just say, come on, you can do it. You know, you can do it. And I, you know, very few Ironmen that I have walked. And if I do walk, it might be just through the drink station. And then I just somehow manage to keep pushing myself to keep running, even though I don't feel like running, you can keep doing it. Unless obviously there's a medical reason you can't.
Sure.
Your mind will give up, your body will say you can do it, but your mind will give up before that. So you just got to tell you, keep it going. Your body can do it.
Yeah. Do you think that's an addiction, like that running and getting through and finishing and that elation from finishing?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, as I say, I did have that reputation of finishing every race I started. We're talking now up to 1,000-odd. So it gets to the stage that you want to finish every race no matter what, because you have finished every race. So that sometimes can be bad in a way. So in a way, I'm glad that I have a DNF now. That pressure's off me now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, to finish, I suppose an Ironman finish, you can't – winning a world title, finishing a world title, Olympic distance is great, but I'd rather cross the finish line of any Ironman. That's more of an achievement than winning a world title for me, because it's a big day, and you know, you are pushing your body to the limits, especially if you want to win the buddy thing,
which you did frequently.
So yeah, it's you're not holding back. You're not going out there for a leisurely another training day, as some people call it. It's just another training day. I am out there to win, so I do push myself pretty hard. So to get to that finish line is a great feeling. And I still get it, no matter what. I've close to over 40 Ironmans now, and it doesn't matter which one, where it is, the finish is way special.
That winning mentality, did you have that from the very beginning? Is it something that you've had your whole life, no matter what you did, it was all to win?
You blame my big brother for that.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Sibling rivalry.
Yeah. He used to beat me in everything. So like the first triathlon we did together, we're both ex-smokers. We were still smoking when we did our first triathlon. And I actually beat him. I came out midfield and he came dead last. So straight away from then, I knew.
I'm onto triathlons, something.
Yeah, triathlons was obviously suited to me. But yeah, I've always been competitive. Football, no matter any sport, you know, the desire for me to win. It's not just sport. It's everything. Yeah. As anybody that knows me, whatever, it could be a game of cards. I don't care. I'm going to win it. That's just the way I am.
Yeah.
Anything I do, I like to do the best I can.
Yeah.
Something that some people might not like, but that's just the way who I am. And I am very competitive and I like winning. I like competing. And doing my best. That's what I do.
And it's worked very, very well for you, I would say. Kevin, this has been such a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. We'll end on one last question. What advice do you give to anyone who is training for an Ironman? Obviously, not right now because, you know, there's no events happening right now, but those who are thinking of training for an Ironman, what's the best advice that you can give them?
Don't. Do it.
Lies, no, all lies.
No, I only say that because it's addictive.
Once you do one,
it's going to cost you a fortune and you're going to do more. It is a very addictive sport. And triathlon itself is addictive. And for me, it's been a lifesaver for me. It's actually saved my life. But the best thing is advice I give starting up is consistency in training is an important part. If you want to finish, you just got to be consistent. Obviously, if you haven't got much experience about putting a program together, there is plenty on the internet. Don't follow other people what they do. Everybody is different. If you're a bit worried about it, get a coach. But there is a lot of information on the internet now. There's a lot of books. When I first started, there was no information. You do what you could do. So be careful what you look at. Be careful at seeing what other people do and find out what your boundaries are. And practice your nutrition in training and getting what works for you, because everybody's different with that as well. But and treat it, train with other people, train with friends. It's a lifestyle. It's not just a race. I know I like winning and I'm competitive, but it is actually a lifestyle. An Ironman is a lifestyle. And as I say, with the Challenge Series, it's a family. And you get to know some great people and it will change your life forever. And it will cost you a fortune, but it's well worth it. Yeah. I incorporate my Ironman with holidays as well and take my wife. So, yeah, it's a lifestyle and it's a great lifestyle.
Well, it's served you well. You've done so incredibly well in your Ironman and triathlon career and still going. And meanwhile, you look 20 years younger than you actually are. So it's served you very well.
Don't know how with being out in the sun all the time.
Yeah, well, there you go. Oh, Kevin, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you too, Jackie. Appreciate it. And thank you for your support over the years.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for listening in today. It is an honor and I truly appreciate you. If today's podcast has helped you in any way, please leave a review and tell your friends and, of course, subscribe. Have a spectacular day and here's to a world of bodies built better.